or I think, act?
I think what the problem, what the Muslim community in the UK has had, it's always, well, historically has been disorganized. There's always friction between the communities. And perhaps the first step would be to actually unite as a community and then forge a path forward. Because if the community is not united and it's divided, then it's created...
But united on the basis of what?
United on the basis of them being Muslims. Of course, there are differences in the theology. Yeah. But when it comes to particular issues, for example, Muslims suffering violence in the UK because of their faith or their ethnicity or their culture, then there needs to be some kind of unification. Hmm. That it cannot be used... as a mechanism or an instrument to divide each other. So I think that's the first thing that needs to happen. And secondly, there needs to be more resources invested by the Muslims into the Muslim community so they can set up organizations that can tackle not only at the grassroots level, but also at the media and at the policy level.
But there are lots of Muslim institutions trying to face, and this happened also in the States, for example. We know about the CARE organization saying, now that's enough. Enough, it's enough. We have our own institutions. We will track, we will follow, we will watch all the people who have anti-Islamic or Islamophobic statements, and we are going to sue them if this is possible and not let the picture be the way it is. Now, if we look at the situation over the last 15 years, the situation is becoming more difficult for Muslims. Mm-hmm. And to dream about the unity of the Muslims today is just a dream. It's not going to happen. It could happen when it comes to some of the issues that are essential. One of them is when they are victimized, as you all say. Now, what could be the first step? If we want to be serious about the issue and saying, look, in the UK, for example, there is a big challenge because this party is gaining ground at the local level. Yesterday, we were talking about the controversy at the national level, what you said about, you know, all these controversies at the international level. Now, at the local level, they are gaining ground. They are reaching the people. What could be done just to counter this a trend that we see with populists, with dogmatic minds, and sometimes, we have to say it clearly, racist politicians and racist activists.
Absolutely. I mean, those ideas are out there, those type of appeals are out there, and they are popular. But for me, fundamentally, what needs to happen really is that we need to actually go out there ourselves. Of course, there are organizations who are working on the grassroots, and they're doing a fantastic job. But I think we need to work together as a whole community and actually branch out into different areas. So it's not just the media, for example. We need to work into schools, into local communities. We need to have inter-community initiatives where we are actually engaging and discussing and opening spaces for debate. Because one of the issues in my research, at least, that has come across is that there isn't spaces for debate. There needs to be spaces for debate within the Muslim community about the Muslim issues, and also debate at the grassroots level between different communities. Because once those debates start, then we can try to forge a path together.
Yes, I have two questions about this. You know, at the end, after now we are reaching maybe in Europe, the fourth or fifth generation of Muslims. Now it's no longer the time where we are talking about migrants. They are British, they are German, they are French. Still, what we are facing with some politicians and leaders, what they say about Islam is just sheer ignorance. Nothing known about Islam, about, you know, the complexity of the scriptural sources, the Quran and all that. Who is to be blamed for that? Because at the end, we can ask, why are the Muslims? Why aren't they explaining why there is such an ignorance? So can we blame the Muslims for not doing the job?
I think initially, there's always going to be a problem with language, especially the semantics of language. Politicians will always use populist language because they're in the game. They're in the game of playing gymnastics with people, in the game of getting popular votes, especially nearing election time. The Muslims need to understand this, and I don't necessarily think they fully understand that the politicians are playing a populist game. They are you know, dividing and conquering in sort of Machiavellian terms. Mm. They are sort of bridging one group against another group. They are using one generation against another generation. But at the same time...
So it's not ignorance. It's playing a political game.
At one level it is.
Yeah.
At one level definitely it is, because it's all about gaining votes. But secondly, yes, there is 100%, you're right, there is ignorance about Islam. Whether it's the ideas not being contextualized, whether there's not understanding Muslims and their practices. But for me, the key things to understand is that there is one Islam, many interpretations, but even more Muslims.
Hmm.
Yeah?
So more Muslims than interpretations.
Absolutely,
even.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But then at Europe, what Europe needs to understand at the EU level, at the government level, and even at the grassroots level, is that Islam and Muslims have been in Europe. At the moment, there's an issue of the Tatars in the Ukraine.
Yeah.
Now, if we look at how long the Tatars have been there, well, the dates back to the 14th century. If you go to further east in the Baltics, you know, how long have Muslims been there? Well, it dates back to the 13th century. Yeah. So there is a history of Islam in Europe. But the problem is that when history has been written and taught in schools, the Muslims and Islam are not mentioned. And I think that's the fundamental problem in the education system, where it doesn't mention the history of Muslims in Europe since the 12th century.
That's very true. But the problem is that many Muslim leaders, and if you listen to some of the Muslim leaders, the way they speak about themselves and the way they speak about their presence, it's as if they are buying this understanding: we are in a host country, we are not part of the history of the continent, and it's as if they are self-nurturing this self-isolation from the society. So it means that we also have to be self-critical with the Muslim discourse by saying, look, that's not the way of getting a better understanding of who you are, what happened in Europe, and what could be the future.
Absolutely, you know, that is the case. Muslims don't understand their history. They don't understand their past. They don't understand that Muslims have been in Europe for a long time. There are very few Muslims that argue that really actually understand this at the grassroots level.
Hmm.
And then, of course, at the leadership level, they do consider themselves immigrants or migrants or second generation.
They are not nurturing the sense
not
of belonging.
Nurturing, absolutely. Hmm. But they don't see themselves as either European Muslims or British Muslims. And I think that's where the nux of the problem lies. Because if you're living in Europe and you're facing issues of victimization and violence because of your religion or the practice of your religion, by then using the language of migration, immigration, then you are opening a gap in your discourse to be attacked for not having the values of European or British, or not supporting any of the politics of Europe or the UK.
Yes, the self-critical approach,
absolutely,
what you are saying, it's important.
But more so, Muslims need to be critical of themselves.
Yeah.
More than another group.
Yes, this is what I meant, the self-critical approach.
Absolutely.
Now, you said something else that I want you to tackle in a very sincere way, and we don't have much time, but I wanted to ask you. You are a European, you live in the UK, you are involved within academia, and you were talking about, let us come with others when it comes to this kind of stigmatization against the Muslims. Do you see people who are so-called indigenous Europeans and white middle-class Europeans very much involved in this resistance to Islamophobia, to racism, that are really ready and sincere in this struggle, with whom the Muslims and the European Muslims can work? Is this serious? Do you have these people? Do you see them? Can you see something which is happening within Europe? Or is it a kind of a silence and passive way? I know we don't have much time, so please, how do you see that?
In a nutshell, yes, there are these people. Yes, they are working. But yes, at the same time, there is mistrust. There is a lack of understanding. And there are divisions on both sides. So people don't really know how to take each other, how to understand each other, how to trust each other. And this needs to happen. this needs to happen. And we can just take the cases of what was happening in Woolwich last year. And these kind of incidents only serve to make people rethink their alliances, their allegiances, and working together. So what we need to do is ensure that there are these incidents happening, but they don't represent the whole community, their fringes. But the key thing, the message that needs to go out to academics, to NGOs, to grassroots activists, is the fact that we need to work together. Yes, there are minorities in every community that engage in acts of intolerance and violence, but we need to go forward together.
Thank you so much. Once again, the starting point of our discussion was mainly about, is this real? Is this happening on what you are saying? Looking at the figures, knowing what is happening in different European countries, yes, there is something which has to do with stigmatization and racism. What you are saying, which is important, we have to be very careful not to think it's completely new. There are very old historical trends which have to do with racism and xenophobia and targeting the migrants that we see now towards the Muslims in the way they are rejected. At the same time, there is something new, which is targeting the Muslims and targeting a religion, something which has to do with Islamophobia, with new populism and new political trends. And this is where the Muslims, and this is what you were advocating, should be more united and come together, understanding what are the reasons and how it works within the society. Now, it's also important to get a sense that we have to be self-critical. Many things are not done from within the Muslim communities, among the academics, the thinkers, the leaders. And at the same time, there are lots of people around in Europe that are ready for this and ready to be part of the process and being involved in anything which has to do with resisting xenophobia, populism and racism. It's up to the Muslims also to be involved in the whole discussion and the whole struggle and resistance. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen. And here is the way to contact us.
We at Islam and Life would like to hear your views about the subjects that we discuss. We would also love to hear your suggestions for our program. So get in touch with us. You can also share your thoughts with other Islam and Life fans, engage in debate, and find out how to watch our previous shows. Follow us on Twitter at Islam and Life TV, or join us on Facebook by liking our page Islam and Life on Press TV.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Dr. Mohammad Ilyas. Thank you so much for your presence and your input. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.